What are we going to be talking about after the Oregon-Boise State season opener on Saturday? Let's break it down.
Welcome into the Odds and Audibles podcast. It's game week. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel on the show. As always, it's a Monday edition of week one. Oregon takes on the Boise State Broncos, 12:30 p.m. Pacific time kickoff from Autzen Stadium. CBS broadcast, their big, big network crews going to be here, national broadcast. Excited for this one. It's the first game of the year, which obviously adds a little extra juice to the game. And then it's a big name in Boise State, a recognizable name, and it kicks off Oregon's season in which, look, expectations are as high as they've ever been. The idea that this is a national championship caliber team is alive and well, and it's reflected kind of in our mailbag this week. So if you're new to the show, hey, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, subscriber, watch us on YouTube, thank you for doing that as well. We do want to remind you guys, if you are wanting to support the show in the best way, the easiest way is to sign up for a VIP membership at duckterritory.com. And we have a special promo for just you guys, the listeners here. Duck60 gets you a 60% off an annual membership. So, hey, we're helping you save money by helping us support the show. So, win-win conversation there. Duck60 in your promo codes. Do that now to save 60% off an annual membership. Full wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon athletics, Oregon football, and this season. Eric, game week is here, and then mailbag every Monday for the foreseeable future. So let's kick this off.
Should we talk format just for the week? So Monday is going to be mailbag. Wednesday we'll have a guest from the opposing team most weeks. There will be some weeks where that may not come together. And then Thursday is going to be our prediction show. I would just keep an eye out for Thursday. That's where we're going to really dive into the matchups, talk about some keys, and then break down how we think the game will play. And then every Saturday, this is also a change this year. We're going to be in the press boxes recording from Autzen or from whatever stadium.
Live show too.
Be a live show, so it's going to be a little bit of a different thing. We're going to try to get it, directly from the press conference, get up as quick as possible, dive into some podcast conversation with you, the fans. So we're trying to kind of amp up some things here. So that just thought it'd be good at the top of the show, Matt, to kind of to let them know kind of what to expect from us all season. That's going to be the breakdown all year. 4 podcasts a week: Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. So keep your eyes out. If you're a Duck fan, I'm sure you're excited for wall to wall coverage, which is what we're providing. All right. Mailbag, the first of the season. I'm kind of giddy right now, man. I'm pretty excited. Like,
here we go.
We actually have a season that starts in like 5 days. We watched some games over the weekend, which was a good time. But let's start with this one here from at Dylan A. Hoffman. It's the first game of the year, ! I'm so happy it's back. Ditto. When we have next Saturday's podcast up from you guys, what do you hope the storyline will be? Thought this was just a good place to start setting expectations. Absolutely. For next week. I'm hoping we are exiting that game saying, for the first time in the series history, Oregon really put it to Boise. Like, it wasn't, the first 3 times they played didn't go Oregon's way. And some of those being more memorable than others. And it's a pretty, actually, the kind of bad blood in at least 2 of them, right? And you got one where you've got a sucker punch from an Oregon player. You've got another where the Boise State defensive back takes out an Oregon quarterback and kind of changes that game with what was pretty clearly a cheap shot. It's been a long time since that was 15, 16 years ago since those games were played, but it wasn't until the 2024 season that Oregon actually got the upper hand in this rivalry, 37-34, really close game that was decided in the fourth quarter. Just a real basic thing here is Oregon wins decisively. Spread's 24.5, Matt, which we can and we will debate later this week if that seems high, low, achievable, not achievable. But I think regardless, the expectation should be Oregon wins. They win decisively. It's not a game in the fourth quarter. I hope that's what we're talking about as we come out of this. I think if it's not, we may have to reassess a little bit of expectations. With that said, the 2024 season, that really close game, we were kind of in that boat too of, oh, man, maybe we jumped the gun here. Maybe this Oregon team's not cut out to be what we expected it would be. And yet they ended up running the table the rest of the way, finished the regular season undefeated, won the Big Ten championship. We're the number one seed in the college football playoffs. We know what happened afterwards, but still, it was a 13-0 start to a season. Nothing to kind of scoff at there. So I think you want to see this season start with some momentum, with a decisive victory over the Broncos, and really kind of putting some past history to bed.
I look at the outcome of this game, and what I'm hoping we're talking about is, well, 14 returning starters. They've got 46, I believe, returning players from last year's roster. The experience, the talent, the depth at multiple positions on most sides of the football is immense. And so while I'm not expecting a mid-season November level well-oiled machine to be operating for Oregon game one, like that's just unrealistic. No matter how much experience you have, the talent you got, that's unfair. What I am hoping, though, is we see in spurts where we're walking out going, oh yeah, this team is as deep, this team is as talented, this team is as fast, this team is as athletic as we think they are, or we thought they were coming into week one. And we see a performance where we go, yeah, when they get into midseason form and they're hitting on all cylinders, this team's going to be deadly. And how do we see that? What am I going to have to see to be able to justify that? Of, hey, like, do we see multiple third down stops or three and outs on defense? Do we see the offense put together, you know, back-to-back scoring drives with that? Complimentary football. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect for the entire 60 minutes, but do we get that 15-minute or that 20-minute stretch of game time action where they play complete complimentary football? It doesn't matter really when it comes from, as long as it happens. And we walk away going, yeah, if they play like that for a full 60 minutes, oh boy. And if they don't have complimentary football throughout the season or throughout the game, and it's two steps forward, one step back, and it's a slow sludge like it was, you know, a couple years ago against Boise, then yeah, we'll probably have to reassess and, okay, like, we still think they can get here, but they now have X, Y, and Z they have to get, you know, solved and checked off the box before we can start talking like this again. I'm thinking we're going to talk about a team that's going to come out, and it might only be for a 12-minute stretch, but they're going to play elite football, and we're going to go, yep, that's what we were hoping to see. That's what we wanted to see. And this is the team that we thought they were going into the year with elite talent on both sides of the football. I think that's what we're gonna talk about. It's not going to be a clean game. It's not going to be a perfect game, but we're going to walk away going, yeah, we saw enough to continue to look at this team as the number two team in the country.
And one other thing I just want to hit as we finish this, and we'll jump to our second question momentarily here, is that Matt and I both have gone on record as 12-0 predictions this season. We both think it's attainable. We both think this team is capable of winning every game on its schedule, and they're going to be favored in all but one, I would imagine. And we'll see as we get to November what the discourse is between Oregon and Ohio State. But
right,
they're currently 24.5 point favorites here. They're close to 20-point favorites against Oklahoma State. I think it's 6.5 against USC, and lines haven't come out as much in October. But the trajectory here is this Oregon team is going to be the better football team every time it takes the field. And I think it's just like a simplified way of putting it. I hope we come out of Saturday being like, there's no question. Like, Oregon was the better team. Boise State wasn't deserving necessarily to be on the field, at least not in a competitive fashion. Not to say they're not going to win a lot of games this year. This is a proud program that's won the, you know, won the Mountain West, I think, the last 3 years. They're now in the Pac-12, which feels bizarre to talk about, by the way, that there's a Pac-12 conference still, and it's made up of a bunch of teams that weren't really good enough to be in the Pac-12 before, but here we are. But regardless, like, I'm not trying to be disparaging of that program, because the Broncos have done incredibly well and, again, hold the series lead. But I hope we're leaving Saturday just being like, without a question, we know who the better team was. It was, yes, Oregon, and that propels them to where we think they can go the rest of this year.
I 100% agree with that, and that's right. Like, you and I both are extremely high on this team's expectations. I originally had them going 11-1, and I changed it going into my prediction. I'm all in on this talent. I'm all in on the composite, the experience, the development. I posted a story over the weekend with Charles Davis, who will be calling this game for CBS. And one thing that he talked about was, you know, sometimes he went back to look at the Jordan teams, look at the Warrior teams and the NBA, look at Kirby Smart at Georgia and Nick Saban at Alabama. Like, success wasn't immediate. These guys had to go through some fire trials and multiple times of getting to this elite level and failing, and to really figure out how to get there. And this Oregon program now, they've been in the playoffs 2 years in a row. They've been to the semifinals. Like, they've been to these stages, and it's not going to be a case of, oh my gosh, look where we're at. Like, this is crazy. Mm. We're super excited. Like, this is normal for them now. And maybe normal is not the right word, but the expectations are different and the experiences play into that. And so if I had to point to like an individual thing too, for what I would be hoping to see is Dante Moore's command and just owning of the game. And like when you watch sports, there's always that one guy that is the best player on the field, he or she, and everything comes easy. Everything comes smooth. They're in total control. That's what I'm looking for from a Dante Moore perspective. Obviously, receivers could drop passes. A receiver could miss a catch and it gets intercepted, and that's not the fault for Dante Moore. So I'm not really worried about the stats, but does he look like he's at ease, in control, and the best player on the field? And from an individual perspective, and I think we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, oh my gosh, this Heisman, you know, the Heisman campaign started at, you know, that's already been going on for Oregon, and the number two ranking, obviously Oregon's high up there too. I think we're going to walk away going, yep, this team is as good as we thought they were. And we're going to see a lot from Dante Moore that tells us, yeah, he's the best quarterback in college football. Look at how easy things came to him. Look at the checks he made. Look at the command of the offense that he has.
How about defense, sacks? I hope we're talking about some sacks.
Yep.
That'll keep it really simple there.
About some sacks.
I hope we're talking about some. I hope they're getting after the quarterback. I hope that's what we come out talking about on that side of the ball. All right, let's jump to the second one here, Matt. From at Elias and Jason, we should note these are on X. And the fourth question, I think, is from our message board, the Duck Pond, which, again, if you're not a member, we've got the promo code in the bottom corner there for you to change that. If you'd like to be a part of our discourse, I think it's worthwhile. Great community for Duck fans. Jason's question, what is the biggest question about this Oregon team you think this game will answer leading into the season? Offensive line seems obvious, but there are questions about special teams and about how good the front seven really will be against the run. Thank you, Jason, for asking that question. I think it's a worthwhile one. We kind of touched on two things right at the end there that are maybe natural transitions into this. I think we both would say, like, we want to see if Dante has, like you said, a complete command of the offense. We want to see if the front seven can get after the quarterbacks, but the opposing quarterback, I should say. I think, and maybe this isn't the biggest question, because those are maybe a little bit prevailing, and we just touched on those a little bit, and kind of hope to see from those certain aspects of the game. But I want to see like kind of what a hierarchy of the skill positions look like, because there's so many names, right? And if you read through just the receivers that we think could be contributors, the running backs who we know, but we think there might be more, and there's a question about that coming up, so we'll kind of save some of those thoughts. The tight ends that are involved in this offense. I'm really curious to see, and again, this is part of the lack of practice access. Matt and I haven't seen, just like you guys, this team play at all. Haven't seen them even in really pads since the end of April. So it's been a long time since we've had really any assessments of what this team looks like. And I think offensively, I'm just fascinated to see, who are the go-to guys? And maybe we won't necessarily learn all of that game one, but just to get a sense of like, Dante and Evan Stewart, we have no sense of what that chemistry looks like on the field aside from the spring game. But in the spring game, they were not on the same side, right? I think Dylan Raiola was the quarterback who threw the ball to Evan, who took it for the touchdown. I'm curious just to see some of those things, right? Like, people forget last year's season ends kind of with DeCorian in a weird place, coming off back from the injury, wasn't as involved in the postseason run. Like, what does that relationship look like with Dante, right? Like, does Jamari or Jeremiah, two guys who finished last year seemingly as his favorite targets along with Malik Benson, like those were kind of the names, and Kenyon Sadiq as well, but like those are the hot four receivers and the guys that really incorporated. Does it feel that way still? Like, are there still remnants of that kind of budding relationship between all those players? So I'm kind of just curious on kind of how all this fits together. Like, yeah, I'm with you, Matt. I think Dante, we expect him to take a step. I'm also just curious, like in this passing offense, where does he go on the big downs, like where things get tough? If they go for it on a fourth down, which I'm sure Dan will roll the dice a couple times in this game, on a third and long, where is he looking? Who steps up in those moments? We spent the whole offseason, you know, kind of hypothesizing about, oh, maybe it's DeCorian's team as a receiver. Maybe it's going to be Evan. Maybe it's just going to be all of these guys. And that probably is the most likely answer, is it feels like, man, he's got so many options. But I'm curious just to see, coming out of game one, what do we think this looks like in terms of like, okay, this feels like receiver one, two, three, and four, tight end one, two, three, all that. I'm just curious on kind of how we come away feeling that.
And I'm right there with you. But Eric, I also wonder, like, how much are we going to actually learn around that because of potential score and situation? Oregon, remember, is a 24.5-point favorite.
Sure.
And I think we're going to get a clear idea in the first half of what Oregon's depth chart could look like. But at some point, if this game goes the way odds makers think it will go, it turns into a blowout. And we see a continuous rotation of guys coming in and out and mixing and matching and whatnot based on past history. So some of these questions, I think, that you brought up, I'm in all agreement of it. But I think some of them we probably won't know the answers to probably until USC, which is kind of nerve-wracking.
A little bit. I think that's right. I also think like the game will be tied to start, right? Like that's the way it goes. There's going to be some part of this game, you're right, the first half, and maybe that's how we come out of it. It's been like, it's kind of an incomplete answer, but we saw for five drives, it feels like Dante likes this player, that player. It's not going to be fair to make too big of assumptions, but you're right that I think it's probably fair to enter this game expecting we're not going to have wholesale answers on anything.
We will, though, to your point, who are the five stars on the offensive line? And if we see, like, after the second series, a change, that tells us something. That tells us that the job's probably still up for grabs, and they're trying to figure out who's the winner there, who continues to elevate themselves. And, shoot, we might, if this game is remotely close or if it's a blowout in its entirety, we might still see – you know, Oregon rotate receivers because they've got so many of them. And that might be the norm for the year, where they're just consistently rotating guys in and out to guarantee freshness for whoever's out on the football field. Personnel groupings might be important too, to track, of just how often do they go with double tight ends? How often do they go with two running backs? What do they do, both of those at the same time? They did that frequently last season. I don't know. I don't anticipate it being a regular occurrence, but do they do it? Combinations, in the secondary. But, yeah, like I think there's a lot of information we're going to get in the first week. And to a point, you almost kind of hope, I guess, for you and I's perspective, to do our jobs. You hope this game can be as competitive in the length of time as it possibly can be. And from an Oregon perspective, still cover, so that we get more sample sizes of it being a competitive game to see what Oregon's game plan is at, when they don't have to be worrying about, all right, let's get these other guys in. We want to keep guys fresh. We don't want to show too much and the case. So for me, I would look probably along the offense and defensive lines. Who's the starting unit? What's the first guy or two guys that come in, if they come in, along the offensive line? And then the defensive line, we know who starts, but – where do the guys fit behind them? How often do they fit? Where do they fit? And what kind of combinations do we see of the blended starting and backup guys? That's what I'm really interested in on the defensive side, is when they blend starters and backups, what do those combinations look like?
Well, and here's another one, Matt, is if this game does get a little out of hand, like I think we both anticipate, is that not a good opportunity to see what the second team defense looks like, to really get an assessment of the Matt Johnsons and Aiden Breelands and Asir Wyatts and Elijah Rushings, and go on down the list, DeAndre Robinsons, the Jet Washingtons in the secondary, Devon Benjamins, if he's, the guys who we don't anticipate start. Benjamin maybe is a bad example, but just a younger player we haven't seen. Like, if this game does get out of hand, to your point, maybe we end up learning more there. And one thing I just dawned on me that I think is a really kind of a good way to look at this, if we're going to take Chris Hampton at his word, but I think it was Rob Mosley who asked, like, you go into the first game of seasons, you often hear like offenses are going to be pretty vanilla. they're not going to really put too much out there on film for opposing teams to look at and kind of analyze and break down and try to get a jump on. Chris Hampton was like, we don't do that on defense. Like, we're going to put everything in. We're unleashing is the term he used. So from that perspective, Matt, I think it's fair, at least he's setting the stage for it to be fair, to approach game one as we're really going to learn if he makes anything schematically different, if he's using different personnel packages differently, how his aggression increases. That's something he's talked about, wanting to be more aggressive, more blitzes, right? More exotic stuff, more simulated things that we, I think, saw a fair amount under Tosh, but like, what does it look like? I think we'll get a better sense of like kind of what that might look like, because Chris has come out and said like, hey, like I'm not holding back. Like, Boise State almost beat us the last time we're here. They're a really good football team. And his other point was like, in football, like everybody does the same stuff. Basically, it comes down to the personnel groups, which is again why they're probably so guarded on who's playing where and who's in what, you know, part of the rotation. But I think it's fair now, based upon how Chris is, you know, Hampton has communicated that answer, that we will have some sort of an assessment on what this defense really looks like, and with his fingerprints on it, I guess. All right, let's jump over here to the third question from at Ashley Sport 24. Who is the third running back behind Jordan Davison and De'Aaron Hill? And then the second
question,
will Akili Smith Jr. get playing time this season? I think two good questions, two that we don't have definitive answers for. The momentum seems to be leaning Brandon Smith's direction right now, the true freshman from Fresno who's had an excellent camp, it sounds like. Excuse me. I'll also say, even though everyone's been really positive with him, and I think maybe long-term that's the way this goes, I'm still going to earmark Drew Merringer's answer to a question I asked specifically about these freshman running backs and kind of game one readiness. And his answer was like, hey, look at De'Aaron Hill last year. We didn't necessarily know what we had with him until the game, you know, the season went further in. And obviously by Penn State, he was a focal point, scores that key touchdown, you know, has a couple big plays. Like, it was pretty clear at that point, like, okay, this is going to be a guy for the rest of the year. It may be a case where we open with one of the more veteran players, whether it be a Simeon Price, the transfer from Colorado, or Dink Riggs, the third-year player who's dealt with some injuries, and we kind of haven't necessarily seen him full gas, really, I don't think, since maybe his freshman season. Maybe it'll be a case those guys kind of hold the advantage early, and Brandon Smith has an emergence similar to a De'Aaron Hill, where by maybe it's the Oklahoma State or the USC game, you're looking up and going like, oh, that's the kid everybody was making, you know, such a big stink about during fall camp. So I think long-term, Brandon Smith probably is the right answer, Matt. I think week one, I'm not going to be surprised if it's Davison Hill and then the third back we see on the field is one of those two upperclassmen who've been, you know, not in the program longer in Price's case, but have a far more experience. I think Price is actually in his sixth year of college football, so he's a real vet in like his fourth program. So that's kind of where I'm leaning right now.
Yeah, I would project right now, if De'Aaron Hill and Jordan Davison had to come off the field, I would pick Simeon Price to be the first guy on the football field. I also would think that answer changes drastically, so I'm with you. I think Brandon Smith probably assumes that role. Maybe Tre'Davious Ball assumes that role. I think both Smith and Ball will play. I think they're probably going to go over, I'll say 75 snaps this season in some capacity. That's not carries. That's just being out on the field, 75 snaps. Part of that, partly because I think Oregon plays about 14 games this season.
Hopefully
more than that. But that's basically six snaps a game for those guys to hit 75 with 14 games played, if they play in every single game. Some games will probably play a little bit more, but I think the answer week one is Simeon Price, but I think the answer week six could be a different answer. And I think that's the intrigue. That's the mystery. That's the excitement that we have for the games is we've heard a lot of stuff. But until we see it with our own eyes, there's some stuff that you hear that you just don't really want to get all aboard unless a coach comes out and is like, yeah, he's our third best running back. And I don't feel like we've heard that yet.
We haven't. No, not from a coach. We've heard a lot of positive stuff from players and from coaches, but not definitively in that manner. So, I think that's a fair way. I'd probably pick Riggs over Price if I was going to pick one of the older guys personally. But I think we're on the same page there. Let's move over to Keely Smith Jr. And this is one that I'm really fascinated. I think we've talked about this quite a bit last Tuesday when we did our offensive look ahead, kind of a breaking each position group down. I think when we talked to quarterback, we kind of zoomed past the Dante Moore of it all and then really focused in on Akili. But we can kind of rehash some of this. Like, will he get playing time this season? I still think he's like quarterback 4 currently. And that doesn't mean he's a bad player. I think it sounds like he's actually had an excellent camp. I still look at Brock and I still look at Dylan as just more proven commodities. And so, like, when's Akili going to get on the field? It's going to be dependent upon if he can move his way up the depth chart, and maybe we're underselling him. Maybe he's already left a couple of those guys, and maybe he's really in more of that QB3 spot and pushing to be QB2. It very well could be. I think we all understand Brock Thomas has been in the system a long time as a very capable player for his own, you know, physical limitations. He's just a little undersized and maybe lacks a little bit of the arm power that you have from a Raiola or a Smith. And we can all assess, like, I think pretty honestly that Raiola and Smith were former 4- and 5-star recruits, and Brock Thomas is a walk-on from Sheldon, who, again, I fully believe if he was 6'2", 6'3", would be starting at least at an FCS level right now. And frankly, maybe he could be doing that currently if he didn't want to be here. So I'm trying to be really careful because I value what Brock Thomas provides. But, like, would it be surprised that Akili is actually ahead of him as you get further into the season? I don't think so. But I also don't know, like, how much playing time he's going to realistically get if he's not QB2. And because you go back to last year, certainly early on in the season, right? I remember that Oklahoma State game. I think like every quarterback saw the field basically. Maybe there's a case of that against Portland State, but as you get further into the year, the likelihood of playing a third quarterback is pretty slim, I think. And so I think Akili Smith Jr. is going to continue to be kind of this big mystery for Oregon fans of like, man, everybody in the spring, it was Koa Kai and Dante Moore being like, he's got the strongest arm on the team. Strongest arm on a quarterback room that has 2 former 5-stars in it, right? Like 2 guys that are NFL talents. He has a stronger arm than it. And then the fall, it was, he's putting it all together. Dante's like, man, he's really come a long way in terms of reading defenses and understanding things. Koa said the same thing. It may just be this tantalizing talent that we're hearing about for a while as opposed to something we're seeing on the field. So I'm kind of anticipating that. Yeah, I think he'll get on the field maybe once, twice, 3 times, depending on how much dominance we see from this Oregon team that presents those opportunities. But I think ultimately we're going to end up coming out of 26 feeling like we've heard all this stuff. It sounds like he's been really, really dominant in practice or really impressing in that aspect. But on the field on Saturdays, we just didn't really see a lot of him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't commit to seeing Akili Smith on a regular basis. His best bets are probably going to be Week 2 at Oklahoma State, maybe. I mean, they've got a good coach. They've got a good quarterback that's transferred in from North Texas, both of them. They've got some skilled players. I think they're going to be drastically better than they were last
year. Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty good.
Portland State is the most obvious one. That if he's going to play, that's where we see a fourth quarterback get in the field. I guess the difficult question that we would never get the answers on is if we asked Dan Lanning or Koa Kai or Drew Maringer, the offensive coordinator, like, how much do you look at development between Brock Thomas and Akili Smith Jr.? One guy's originally a non-scholarship player, a guy that probably doesn't have it sounds really mean and harsh, but a future being the starting quarterback at Oregon and Brock Thomas.
It might sound harsh. I think it's fair, though, Matt.
And Akili Smith, who that's still a real possibility for him in his career at Oregon. How do you handle the development? Look, like, you could lose guys in any room, whether it's Oregon or whatever, of well-liked walk-on guy, well-liked player, regardless of scholarship situation, works hard, does all the right things, has performed when been called upon in games previously, and to just overlook him, to not even give him an opportunity, you might lose some of the trust inside the locker room as well. Those are like the really deep layers of coaching that we would love to know the answers to. We'll probably never get them. But how does Lanning and company as a staff manage that situation? Because it will probably come up against Portland State, right? Where we could see a third quarterback play. How do you decide between a guy who probably won't ever be a starter at Oregon and a guy who we don't know if Akili Smith could be, but he still has that potential to become one? Who do you give the reps to if it's only a finite number of snaps?
And the answer probably in some form is who's the better player right at this moment. And
sure.
That's probably a more complicated answer than fans want to acknowledge, just because I know Akili's
Brock Thomas.
I was just going to say, Akili's entering year two. This is Brock's fourth year in the program, in this system, working with this staff. And he knows that was why he was on the field last year. And frankly, like, you look and see Austin Novosad's not the winning starting quarterback at Bowling Green. I don't believe Luke Moga's the starting quarterback at New Mexico. Clearly neither of those guys, like that whole hubbaloo last year about like, oh my gosh, why is Thomas out here over these guys? It was pretty clear he was just better than those players. And maybe we're underselling him this year, and it's going to be like, boy, is he so much further along than Akili. But I think especially to start this season, it's realistic to say Brock Thomas has been in this program a long time. He was quarterback two last year. Akili would have to take a huge jump here. And I know the physical tools are clearly more appealing long-term, but you're right, Matt. I think right now, I think you need to be focused on who's the better player, who's deserving of these reps. And I think probably right now it's Brock Thomas. And that's a tough answer to give because I know the fans want to see Akili, and I hope we get to see all four against Portland State. That game is going to be an absolute butt kick. I mean, I was pulling it up. Like, Oregon's won like the last four games in that series by like over 70 points. Like, it's not going to be competitive. So that's an opportunity to get everybody out there, and maybe those reps will be important in determining that going forward. But the reality with Akili is you're probably not playing your third quarterback hardly at all this year, and I'm still not convinced he's QB3 at this moment. And frankly, like, who's two? But I'm actually more interested in who's two between Raiola and Thomas. I think we all assume it's probably Raiola to like start a game, but you could convince me that if something were to happen to Dante right now, that maybe Brock would be the guy who comes in the middle of a game just because of his readiness and his past history here. So I think it's fascinating, and I don't know if we're going to have answers to this type of thing until Portland State and beyond. All right, let's wrap it up with this one from the Duck Pond message board over at duckterritory.com from Pettit Bros. From what is being reported, it looks like we have four of five O-line written in pencil with Crater, Utu, Poncho, Tofi. How much is the fifth starter being up in the air down to Iuli's injury versus guys like Addison and Wilson having strong camps? Overall, sounds like the depth is there to have guys you trust with this group plus Kavika Rogers. There's a lot in that question, and we didn't throw questions up on the screen because we've got this really pretty graphics at the bottom, and it would kind of block all that. I wish fans could use this, have that on the screen for their sake, so they could reference it, because there's a lot going on. The initial premise that's who the four guys are is highly speculative at this point. Like, that it's Crater, Utu, Poncho, and Tofi is not anything the staff has said. Is not anything we've seen, is purely coming from back channel conversations. And I think you can take those with a bit of a grain of salt at this point. With that said, if that's where it is on Saturday, that's where it is on Saturday. And I'm not going to be shocked, but I think it's worth acknowledging, like, in my mind, at least, if Dave Iuli is healthy, he was an all conference player last year. I'd imagine he's ahead of an Utu or a Tofi, who are a couple of first and second year college players who have immense upside and talent. And no one's denying that. And Tofi in particular, I think everyone is sold on this could be the next first round NFL offensive lineman for this program. Like, he could be that type of a player. But I think it's like, why are we second guessing whether or not Iuli is available if he's a starter or not? I think it's pretty clear if he's healthy, he's starting. And that moves some things around for that interior. And it does sound like that right tackle, based upon the back channels and things that were being said, not publicly, that, yeah, Zaire Addison and Janoris Wilson are the most likely bets to start at right tackle. That does seem to be the buzz, quote unquote. We'll see if that's accurate or not. I'm frankly really fascinated by both of those players from an athletic perspective and kind of how they fit together. And I think all of this makes this final point from this post. Sounds like the depth is there to have guys you trust. To me, that's the through line for all of this, is if Oregon, and you brought up the idea earlier, and then Dan obviously brought it up like right before fall camp, if Oregon continues to rotate, I'd imagine that's more about they've got six or seven guys they really like and think deserve the opportunity, as opposed to it being like, we got four guys we really like and three other guys who maybe are good enough, and let's just give them all a try and see which ones are good, who the best five is. Like, I think it's more they feel really good about where they're at. They have a lot of good options, and now it's just about mixing and matching it. So, you know, I put up my two deep prediction up on the website on Saturday, and it looks a little bit like this. I made some changes. I have Iuli in there as a starter. I lean Janoris Wilson at right tackle. I think Tofi has a great chance, along with Douglas Utu, to start at one of the guards. But I think it's probably one of the two. It's probably one of the two right now. But like, I also am fully invested in the idea that like this will change, and that this is whatever we see on Saturday maybe isn't the thing we see a month from now when they play USC. And then the last thing I'll share before I toss it over to you, I'm really curious that like Michael Bennett's name doesn't seem to be in these conversations right now, or at least that's not how people are looking at it as a starter, especially a guy who came over from Yale as an all-conference player. It's not to say like I expect somebody to make that transition to be amazing, but that was the one player they highlighted and targeted in the portal, or at least were able to get a commitment from. I know they recruited other players. The fact that he would be brought in and not beaten out and beaten out by younger players, again, I think that sort of solidifies the point I'm making earlier about the depth here. Like, you bring over a fifth-year player who's all conference, albeit in a lower level, and he can't even sniff the starting five because some of these younger players are coming, to me suggests that the depth is really in a good spot, as opposed to it being like they're absent of good players.
Yeah, I would agree with you that if Iuli is healthy, he's starting at one of the guard spots. If he's not healthy, then yeah, we probably see a Tommy Tofi and a Douglas Utu both in the starting lineup. I think, are we in agreement that while we think Kowika Rogers probably plays, he's probably not going to be starting at one of the positions?
I don't buy Kowika Rogers as a starter at Oregon.
Yeah, and that's like he's going to continue to fill a role that he has had the last like 4 years, it feels like, of kind of a Swiss Army knife and be one of the guys first off the bench if an injury happens or if, you know, fatigue comes into play. But I think if Iuli is healthy, he starts at one of the spots, followed by Tommy Tofi and Douglas Utu probably battling for the one spot that's open. Janoris Wilson's kind of the experienced guy here. I think he probably gets the nod. I agree with you there. Over Zaire Addison, maybe Tommy Tofi's bouncing between, which would be extremely hard to do, by the way, of guard and tackle. I don't really know. And then
could be.
It could be. I think we know Fox is probably at left tackle. We know Poncho's at center. And if healthy, Dave Iuli's at right guard. So you've got two positions that we really don't have a true 100% certain look yet, feel yet, but we kind of know the major players here. And so if it's Janoris Wilson, Zaire's probably going to be the backup at right tackle. If it's Tommy Tofi at left guard, it's probably going to be Douglas Utu as his backup. And then from there, where does Emmanuel Iheanacho fit? And where, to your point, does a Michael Bennett fit? Who's your backup center? Is it Devin Brooks, a guy that, you know, Elite Terry was really high on when he signed, was really praising him as a multiple versatile player that could play a lot of spots, but they're going to try and develop him at center. But then they brought in Coley Kelly, who's a true freshman this season. And the early buzz feels like, well, I'm not going to say he's going to be Poncho and be just naturally rotated into the lineup similar to Poncho and JPJ in years prior, does seem like there's some buzz that like, hey, this guy might be pretty good and could be the heir apparent to Poncho. So that's one we just don't really know about yet at center. And then the other guard position, where does it fit? Where does Michael Bennett fit? Is Utu in this decision? Where does Kowika Rogers fit? There's a lot of unknowns, I think, in the second part of this unit depth chart, than more than the first.
Yeah, and like, and that's why I saved this answer, which we could have easily had this conversation during the second question, Jason's question specifically about like big questions going into this game that we want answers for, because there's a lot going on here, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see who starts, but also to see like who's that second unit, and also, you know, again, not to use it over and over again, but also because could they rotate? Like, could this be a case of we look up and it's, oh, first two series were these guys. Third series comes out and they've switched guards and tackles. They've moved a couple players around. That's going to be interesting. And Ayuli's health for this is also, I think, paramount to this conversation, because we will get, not this week, but going forward, we're going to get injury reports on Wednesdays. This week it'll just be on Saturday. But like, we don't really have updates from Dan on his health or on a lot of these guys' health who've been dealing with things. And so, you know, he told me he was going to be full go to start camp on, you know, July 28th or whatever that was. And then 3 days later, Dan kind of poured cold water on that and said, he's still dealing with stuff. He's not going to be full go for a while. I think Terry a week later comes out and says, oh, I'm pretty confident by the time games are played, Dave Bailey's going to be out there.
Yeah.
Well, games are about to be played. Will that be the case? We will learn on Saturday. And frankly, I do think that will have an impact on some of this other stuff. And if he does miss time, Matt, like, is he a Wally Pipp candidate, right? Could he be the Drew Bledsoe pop, you know, gets leapt over by the Tom Brady? Obviously, none of these guys are going to be a Tom Brady impact player on the team, but could somebody in this case, whether it be maybe they start Utu and Tofi at the guards because Ayuli's out, could one of those guys just be so formidable that Leek Terry goes, Dave, you're going to have to work your butt off to win this job back, because right now we're sticking with player X or Y. So
I think that's a very real possibility.
Yeah, and that's what makes this offensive line really interesting to talk about, because it feels like there's seven or eight names of guys that we're talking about here that could very well fit into this, you know, into this conversation. And if one of them is removed, like an Ayuli, that just creates a little bit more opportunity for everybody else, and it could make this really interesting. I'm fascinated by this. This is right up there for the things I'm most excited to just check out on Saturday. Is how right were we? How wrong were we? Right or wrong, what does it look like? Do they execute at the level we expect them to?
All right. Thanks for watching on YouTube and listening wherever you get your podcasts. For fans of this pod, we've got a special treat for you guys. Use the promo code DUCK60, which can be seen on the bottom right of your screen if you're watching on YouTube. Don't worry, audio listeners, it works for you as well. DUCK60 in the promo form when you sign up for an annual membership gets you 60% off an annual subscription to DuckTerritory.com, where you can get the latest recruiting rankings, news, transfer portal updates, and wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon athletics, including our wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon football, which kicks off this week with week one Boise State, like we've said. So until the next time, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.